League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Now, what do astronaut Alan Shepard, swimmer Bill Burgess, politician Margaret Wintringham, and physics teacher David Edwards have in common? They are all second at something, and there's a brilliant book called The Book of Seconds. Its author is joining us now, Mark Mason. Good morning, Mark.
Morning, Bill.
I was just thinking, that Owen Paul record wouldn't have been quite so catchy if it had been "You're My Second Favourite Waste of Time," would it?
It would have been interesting, though, because there's always interesting little stories that the seconds, you never get to hear about them. The thing is, it could have been interesting, but you wouldn't have known about it. That's the thing.
Very true.
That's how we got the idea for the book. We were talking about, I saw it to my editor, and we were talking, one of us somehow mentioned Roger Bannister. This was a couple of years ago, before Bannister died. And so, of course, you know, you instantly think first man to run a 4-minute mile. And I found myself saying, well, who was the second guy to run a 4-minute mile? And don't you feel sorry for him that he's never got the attention?
So, that's fun. It's a brilliant concept for a book. And it's not just people, is it, in the book?
No. The people tend to be the more interesting stories because, you know, there's sort of the human drama always involved. The answer to that one, by the way, in case anyone's wondering, the second guy to run the 4-minute mile was a guy called John Landy.
Of course it was.
He was fascinating. And he only missed by about 3 weeks. honestly, it was, they were both knocking up against 4 minutes, and it was just a case of who was going to have a race, you know, and get there first. And Bannister did it and made 3:59.6, I think. But then Landy came along 3 weeks later and absolutely smashed it. Did 3:57. And his record stood for 3 years.
Bannister
stood for 3 weeks. And Landy, in another race, not in the race where he broke the 4 minutes, but later on, he was running a 1,500-meter race back in his native Australia. And one of the other runners fell over, and Landy doubled back to check that the guy who'd fallen over was okay, then still managed to make up the difference between him and the leaders, and he still won the race.
Wow! That is an interesting story.
I know, if Roger Bannister had done that, you'd know all about it. But because it was John Landy who happened to be second, you don't. But you're right, it's not just people. There's ones from nature, like K2 was one of my favourites.
Yes.
Now, again, that's one where you've heard of it, but you don't know anywhere near as much about K2 as you do.
Ah, well, you say that, but only last week we had a man on the show who's climbed it. So, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, he is one of about 300 people who's climbed K2. 3,000 have climbed Everest. So I'm seriously impressed with him. No doubt he was telling you that it's, you know, serious mountaineers say it's a much more difficult climb than Everest.
Yes, of course. And I asked him the obvious question, why is that? And he said, because it's blooming steep. It's really steep.
Well, that's it. They might as well have a cable car on Everest. No, that's an exaggeration, obviously. But, you know, lots and lots of people do Everest every year. It's K2 has killed way more people proportionately than Everest has. But my favourite thing was about its name. You know why it's called K2?
Go on.
When they were mapping out that part of the world in the 19th century, they being the Brits, because we were in charge there at the time, they named some of the mountains after British people, like Everest itself.
Yeah.
A guy in the British Army called George Everest. And originally it was known as Peak 15, Everest, when they first did the surveys of that area. Incidentally, he called himself George Everest. That's the way he pronounced his own name like that. So technically we should say Mount Everest. But anyway, K1 and K2 were the two tallest mountains in the Karakoram range, hence the K. Now, K1 has got a local name, and that's what it very quickly reverted. We all reverted to using its local name. But K2 is so forbidding and so remote that you can't see it from the nearest village, so it's never had a local name. It never had a name until the Brits came along, called it K2. And one mountaineer that I found when I was doing the research, and I put this in the book, he said it's actually a really good name because K2, it doesn't tell you anything about it. It's just a letter, and it's very sort of anonymous and forbidding and scary and remote. Yeah. So he thinks that's why it's an appropriate name.
How interesting. Now, I interviewed a very famous man who was second at something, and that was the wonderful Buzz Aldrin, who, of course, was the second man on the moon. Yes. And it was only at the kind of last minute, really, that it was between him and Armstrong as to who was going to go first. They were equally qualified, and NASA, in the end, just picked Armstrong. How history changes on a dime.
Well, he's still done quite well out of it, Buzz Aldrin. He's notoriously, I mean, one of the main reasons I wanted to do the book was very early on, I realized I could do a chapter on Apollo 12, which is, okay, Buzz Aldrin was the second man on the moon, but the second mission on the moon, because the book's obviously meant to be about people you've never heard of.
Yeah.
Neil and Buzz, if you call them the first, they were the first mission. Then the second mission to land on the moon, Apollo 12, Pete Conrad and Alan Bean. It's so unjust that they never got the attention because they were far more interesting people. I mean, Buzz Aldrin's turned into quite an interesting guy, but Neil Armstrong was always, and you know, other astronauts will tell you this, he was always actually quite a boring guy and then sort of retreated within himself. Whereas Pete Conrad was the wisecracking one who was always going around NASA making jokes, and he had a bet with a journalist a few weeks before they went. An Italian journalist, female journalist, was interviewing Pete Conrad and Alan Bean. And she said, this was after Apollo 11 had landed. She said, I don't believe that NASA let you say what you want when you're on the moon. I think they gave that line to Neil Armstrong, one small step for man. Well, he messed it up. He said, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. And she said, that must have been scripted. And Pete Conrad said, I promise you, they haven't given me anything. They're not going to give me anything. Let's make up now what you and I think I should say when I first step on the moon. And I bet you $500 that's what I say. So they made up this sentence that because Pete Conrad was 5'6", not as tall as Neil Armstrong, they said, right, the line's going to be, whoopee, that may have been a small step for Neil, but it was a large step for me. And that's absolutely what he said. Go on YouTube now, you can see the clip. As he jumps down, because there's a bit of a step from the bottom rung down onto the lunar surface, that's exactly what he said, and she never paid up.
How fantastic.
He never got the money out of her.
What a great story. There's some really humorous stuff in there, and I'm fascinated by a chap called Bud Rogan of Tennessee, who was just a little bit shorter than the tallest man in history.
I know. He was Bud Rogan. The tallest guy ever came in the 20th century, Robert Pershing Wadlow. He was 8 foot 11. 8 foot 9, I think it was. Bud Rogan was lived back in the 19th century. Just an astonishing story. He was so tall. Basically, he never stopped growing. He lived into his 30s, never stopped growing. And by the time they measured him when he died, basically, I think he was 8 foot 9. But when you say human, yes, there are humorous elements to it. He seems quite happy with his condition. And he couldn't walk, actually. He was too tall to support his own body.
Well, I just think the humorous part of that is that he got around on a cart which was pulled by goats.
I know, yes. I thought you'd like that. Yes. And he used to go to the local railway station in this cart that he had built, pulled by goats, and he would pull himself along and sell postcards of himself and made a living from it and seemed to do okay. The really, really sad bit was that when he died, his mother had him buried in her own garden, and she had to bury him. She had to bury him under concrete because she knew that people would come and try and steal the skeleton.
Oh, good grief.
Which is really, you know, a really sad one. But I thought when you started to form the letter B and you were saying about people, I thought you were going to mention Bill Burgess, who's one of my favourites. Now, I know you mentioned him at the beginning. He was the second man to swim the English Channel. Just an astonishing character. And this is where it's intriguing that a second can actually come along and help the first. First guy to swim the Channel, Captain Matthew Webb in 1875. It took 36 years before someone managed it again. There were 80 attempts. Because very often when someone's done the first, then that just opens the floodgates and just everyone comes in and does it very quickly. Like Landy was 3 weeks after Roger Bannister. Mm. But this one, 80 attempts, it was 36 years, 1911. Bill Burgess became the second guy to swim the Channel. And a really interesting story of just how he did it. He wore motorcycle goggles because he decided his eyes needed protecting from the water. Captain Matthew Webb hadn't worn goggles at all.
Right.
Burgess decided to wear motorcycle goggles, which leaked and let in the water anyway. He drank 20 drops of champagne per hour and not a drop more. Okay. And I love the thought of the guy on the support boat with a little pipette measuring out.
That's
20
great,
drops.
Isn't it?
But anyway, and he rubbed himself down with lard to insulate.
Yeah, but don't we all do that, don't we, Mark?
We all do that once in a while, especially the weather we're having at the moment. And well, some of us are. I know you're not.
Well, you say that. It's not too great here, believe me.
Fair enough. He was, he rubbed himself down with lard, but it was so hot the day he did it that he could only put on, a pound of lard when he wanted to use 3 pounds because he was actually going to start to cook. Anyway, so that's him. And then he, Captain Matthew Webb in the intervening 36 years had died, but Webb's widow was still alive. And she said, I'm really glad that someone has done it for a second time because all these years, lots of people refused to believe that my husband managed it. They thought it was impossible. So that was a nice story of a second coming along, you know, and helping out the first.
Yeah, there are some famous seconds, of course, aren't there? And you talk about some of these in the book, Scott being a good example.
Oh, yeah. Well, I decided we were only going to put things in if there was something new about the story. You know, Scott is famous, as you say, precisely because he was second. He's always cited as, you know, in the great British failures sort of list, but heroic failures and blah, blah, blah. But the one thing that I didn't know, and I was convinced to put this in because I checked with my editor, and Alan, my editor, didn't know. And Alan knows everything about everything.
All right.
And so if he doesn't know, then I thought, all right, no one knows it. I stumbled across this detail that famously Amundsen was first. Scott and his men got there a few weeks, I think, later, and saw that they'd been second. And they were crushed with disappointment. Not only that, they found that Amundsen had left a letter there. And the letter said, Scott opened it up, and the letter said, it was Amundsen saying, I was the first. I reached here on this date. I want everyone to know I was the first. If I die on the walk back to base camp, which in the end is what happened to Scott, yeah, rather than Amundsen, but it's Amundsen saying, if I die on the way back, will someone please take this letter to the King of Norway and tell him that I got the first for Norway?
Wow.
So Scott, at that moment, not only does he know he's failed and he's second, he knows there's a possibility he could be the one that has to tell the rest of the world that he'd failed, that Amundsen was first. You know, it's just an astonishing detail.
Unbelievable. It's a brilliant book to buy for Christmas, people, because it's the one that you just kind of pick up and just start reading and can't put it down again. So people want to get hold of it. The Book of Seconds it is, and author Mark Mason has joined us this morning. Thank you, Mark. Really appreciate
Cheers.
You, sir.
If All anyone the best wants any more of this deeply intellectual stuff on Twitter, it's at WalkTheLinesLDN, or the website's theimportanceofbeingtrivial.com. So I'd love to hear from them.
Walk the Lines.
Walk the Lines LDN. Yeah, one of my previous books was about walking the tube system overground in London.
Ah, I thought it was a Johnny Cash reference for a moment there.
Wait, what, sorry?
I thought it was a Johnny Cash reference for a moment there.
But yes, we were aiming for dyslexic Johnny Cash fans. You don't know there's an S on the end of it. Yeah,
exactly.
Walk the Lines, plural, LDN for London. And that ended up being my Twitter address because that was around the time that book came out.
Got it. Pleasure to talk to you today, Mark. All the best. Take care. Bye-bye.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.